New Line Cinema. A Time Warner Company. Against a hazy terracotta background, a shimmering white figure comes into view, moving quickly. New Line Cinema presents a Caro McLeod Radical Media production. A black horse leaps, a woman in a long white robe on its back. The cell. The horse and its rider continue on past towering red sand dunes. Starring Jennifer Lopez, Vince Vaughn. The horse's jet black head rears upwards as it speeds along. Finally, horse and rider come to a stop by a large undulating dune. The rider dismounts. She's a beautiful woman with dark hair swept back off her face and wearing a white feathered robe. She turns to smile at her horse, which turns into a statue. The woman begins to walk up the sand dune, leaving a trail of footprints behind her. Also starring Vincent D'Onofrio, Marianne Jean-Baptiste, Jake Webber, Dylan Baker, and James Gammon. The woman follows the crest of the sand dune to its very peak, then continues on round the curve, the valley below her in deep shadow. The blazing sun beats down. A startling ray of light bounces off a mirror in someone's hand. The woman continues her progress along the crest of the dune, a tiny white figure against the vast slope of terracotta sand behind her. She becomes smaller and smaller as she heads on into the distance. The mirror flashes again. A plateau of misshapen leafless trees. The boy holding the mirror is resting against an overturned tree trunk. The woman walks towards him, flashes of light from the mirror guiding her in the right direction. The young boy puts the mirror into his pocket and waits. The woman, Catherine, approaches.
Thank you for the horse.
He liked it.
Oh, it's beautiful. But I thought we were going sailing today.
The boy touches his neck awkwardly.
You promised.
She follows his gaze towards a crumbling shipwreck.
Well, that one's too old.
The boy then turns to look at a toy wooden boat.
See, now that'll do. Come on. Come on, Mystery.
It's broken.
Who says?
Makilok.
Now, Edward, we agreed. No more Makilok.
Makilok is the boogeyman. Makilok wants me where I am.
We can fix it.
She picks up the boat.
Edward.
Edward's face has become demonic with contorted features. He sets off across the plateau, and Catherine drops the wooden boat. Catherine clasps her hands, one thumb pressing down on a silver microchip on the other hand. In a darkened room, dressed in a ribbed latex bodysuit, her face covered with a cloth and suspended by numerous wires, she does the same thing. Two people are watching through the window of a control room. The lights are turned on.
Sing a song of sixpence. Sing a song of sixpence.
A pocket full of rye.
The woman in the control room, Miriam, gets up and walks round to double glass doors of the procedure room.
Four and 20 blackbirds.
baked in a pie.
Someone else is also suspended nearby. Miriam comes in and pushes a trolley between the two subjects. She takes the cloth from Catherine's face.
Rise and shine.
Miriam then goes to remove the cloth from the other subject's face. It's Edward, the little boy.
Mr. E is doing fine.
The man in the control room, Henry, does some calculations on his computer.
Did we go sailing?
Almost. Mucky Luck showed up.
Mucky Luck is the boogeyman. Mucky Luck wants me where I am.
Mucky Luck is a pain in the ass.
Where do you get Mucky Luck again?
Mother Goose.
Henry? Barry?
What's the matter, Barry?
Edward's parents are here.
Miriam smiles at Catherine. It's a bright sunny day outside the Campbell Center, a futuristic white building. Inside...
He needs a haircut.
He loves it when you visit.
My husband wonders if that's true. He wants to place Edward in a hospital. I'm sorry, Catherine.
Mr. Baines, I've been working on this project for 7 years.
I know, Henry. I know. Please don't take offense, Dr. Kent. Your work's invaluable to this company.
But you're not sure about me.
We've waited 18 months for signs of progress.
There has been progress.
There's no proof, Catherine.
With all due respect, Mr. Baines, I'm not the one who designed the procedure. I mean, I wish I could take credit for it, but I can't. I was chosen to do a job. They picked me. But if you think there's someone better, or someone who's more devoted to your son, then...
No one's doubting your ability, Catherine.
Well, then what is it then?
There's no proof, Catherine. There's no proof the procedure works. All you're giving me is the belief that your interaction with my son is not a hallucination.
Catherine looks deflated. A large tortoise is plodding through a field of wheat. A truck is speeding up the road bordering the field, leaving a trail of dust and fumes in its wake. A white dog sticks its head out of the truck window. The truck pulls up by a ramshackle outbuilding and two tall cylindrical tanks. A man, Carl Starger, gets out, letting the white dog out after him. He paces slowly towards the building. Starger forces open a door and steps into the darkened building. He takes off his sunglasses. He walks down the shadowy corridor, then turns a corner. In front of him is a huge tank of water in which a woman is suspended. Eyes open, arms stretched out, she floats gently with the movement of the water, her hair briefly covering her face. Starger puts his hand against the glass and watches her. Inside the tank, the woman suddenly flinches into life. Shocked, Starger runs round behind a bank of monitors, unable to watch. On the four screens, the woman's legs can be seen twitching. Then they stop. Starger turns a metal wheel. Outside, water splurges out of a pipe some distance from the buildings.
Goodbye, Mrs. Baines.
Thank you, Mrs. Baines.
Mrs. Baines smiles up at Catherine. Mr. Baines gives her a cold look. Then he and his wife head out.
thinking she worships you.
Why? Because he hates me?
I wouldn't say hates. Distrusts, dislikes immensely. Can't bear the sight of.
Well, what's the verdict?
Well, we've got another 6 months. And Barry had to push for that.
I want to reverse the feed, Miriam. Now more than ever.
We've been through this 100 times, Catherine. It's too risky.
Why not? What do we have to lose? When I did social work, it was always better when we took the kids out of their environment. Foster homes can be scary at first, but eventually they see that things can be different. Edward is like that right now. He's living in a world that is not healthy. Let's show him a different place.
All right. Let's say we do it your way. We reverse the feed and we bring Edward into your mind. Can you imagine his shock when he finds that he's been thrust into this whole other world?
I do it all the time.
Yes, but you're a willing participant, Catherine. You're aware of what's happening. Edward's in a coma. And besides, we don't know what effect it will have on you. I mean, you're already exhausted. Have you been sleeping?
Yes.
Any more nightmares?
No. No.
Good. Leave work here. Don't take it home in this.
Stargus put the woman from the tank into the back of his truck. He climbs into the front cab. He spins the truck round and drives off, leaving a cloud of dust behind him. Nighttime. Outside a house, a cat jumps onto the roof of a car, then scampers off. Inside, Catherine lights up a joint and puffs on it. She looks over at a pinboard with various cards and articles pinned to it. One is about Edward, entitled Billionaire's Son Found in Coma on Seal Beach. Catherine opens her fridge and peers inside. She's dressed in a blue shirt and briefs. The ginger cat rubs up against her naked legs.
Hey, you. What are you looking for? Want some milk?
Starga lifts the dead woman out of a bath of bleach, then turns on a row of shower heads. Her naked body lies beneath the shower, resting on a metal table. Eventually, he pulls a lever to stop the flow of water. Catherine's lying in bed watching TV. On her lap is a small pillow showing a palm reader's diagram of the lines and points of a hand. The TV showing a cartoon of two children whose hair has got stuck together. Catherine smiles. She glances down at the pillow. Then her gaze moves along the folds of her bedspread, which become a series of undulating sand dunes. Moving over the shadowy peaks and troughs of curving sand towards a wide, flat plateau surrounded by steep slopes. At the very centre of the plateau is a black dot, which increases in size the nearer it gets. It's Catherine in her flowing white robes, standing beside a gnarled, overturned tree trunk. She turns to see a seagull fly past.
Seals being killed on the beach while you were sailing? Don't hide, sweetie, please. Edward, is that you? Don't be afraid. No one will hurt you. Edward, is that you?
Catherine wakes up. Starga's white dog barks as a pulley system is set into motion. Starga suspended horizontally from a frame by a number of chains, which have been attached to hooks in the naked skin of his back and legs. He glances at the bank of monitors, showing the woman struggling in the water tank. The dead, naked woman is lying on the metal table below Stargirl. Water is starting to fill the tank the woman's being kept in. Stargirl trembles from the pain of the hooks in his skin. Over a bridge. On the road parallel to it, emergency vehicles have gathered. People mill about and lights flash. Beneath the bridge is another police vehicle. A black car pulls up on the bridge and three men get out. One of them goes to look over the side of the bridge. The other two head over to a detective who straightens up as they come over.
Thanks for waiting, Cole.
Teddy Lee, no problem.
Special Agent Ramsey?
Cole.
Morning. Who found her?
A surveyor for the railroad. About 6 this morning. Skid marks appear to match the tire tracks from Reno. And it looks like he scraped the rail, lost some paint, too. It's on its way to the lab already. Dumped the body over there.
Photographs are taken of the scene. Cole, Teddy, and Gordon go to join Peter, the man looking over the side of the bridge. Cole recoils as plastic is removed from the body.
Bleach. I am Marie Vixie. She makes 7.
Jesus. Do they all look like dolls?
Every unfortunate soul.
What's that?
Some kind of a collar. Part of his methodology.
Well, he puts it there?
He makes it for them. It makes them feel they belong to him.
Is the water always this low?
They turn to look at Peter, who's standing on a rock at the edge of the shallow river.
Yeah, this time of year.
Give me a coroner's report right away. Preliminary forensics, too. I don't want anyone dragging their ass on this.
Another train passes overhead. A woman sitting by a fountain in the sunshine. A man comes to meet her, and they head off together. Stargirl's watching them from his truck a short distance away. He sees the woman touching her boyfriend's face.
Near-term sugar futures eased 0.11 cents to 7.7 cents a pound. Last week, the U.S. Agriculture Department said the world sugar production is expected to drop 6.5...
He glances down at a small doll in his hands. Then he looks back at the woman tossing her blonde hair about in the sunshine. It all becomes too much for him. He opens the glove box and takes out a bottle of aspirin, throwing one into his mouth. Teddy comes into a diner. He spots Peter and Ramsey and waves.
Yeah, good luck with the monster. Okay, I love you too. I gotta go.
Okay,
thanks. All right, bye-bye.
Teddy hands them a file each.
Hot off the presses. Nothing new to report, gentlemen. The match on his semen. Water in her lungs. Show high levels of chlorine and rust. What, pray tell, is this? They say they found some dog hair. From a canine unit?
No, there was no canine unit.
And then Vixie doesn't own a dog, Teddy.
I want to see this.
He gets up.
What you got, Teddy?
Teddy's studying a microscopic image of a hair. Peter walks round the body of the victim, laid out on a metal table.
Hypomelanosis.
And that means?
A complete absence of melanin. The dog is an albino.
He'd love an animal like that.
Gentlemen, I believe an albino dog is a rare animal indeed.
The woman Stargirl was watching, Julia, steps out of a lift into a darkened parking lot. Looking nervous, she does a quick recce of the nearly empty lot, then reaches into her handbag for a can of mace. Gripping it firmly in her hand, she sets off across the parking lot, walking with confident strides towards her blue car, past a pickup truck. She opens the car door and climbs in, quickly shutting the door and locking it. As she's reversing out of the space, looking in her side mirror, she spots a white dog lying on the ground at the rear of the car. She gets out and kneels down to check it's okay, frowning with worry as she strokes its head. Starga comes up behind her and grabs her. She kicks and screams, sending them both falling onto the floor. Starga takes a few moments to immobilize her. At the police department, Peter's in his office, wearing a white vest and brushing his teeth with an electric toothbrush. Gordon opens the door.
Jesus Christ, Peter. Aren't you going to get some sleep? Clean yourself up.
I did.
They're waiting, you know?
I'm ready. Let's go.
We're going to do this two ways. Breeders of German Shepherds. Ford dealers. I want you to be thorough, and I also want you to be fast. This guy's accelerating. He only waited 6 days this time. When he first started, months could pass. Now, that means one of two different things. One, he thinks we're stupid and we can't catch him. Two, which is the one that I believe, he wants to be caught. The dog here thing is sloppy. He leaves Amory Vixie in 3 inches of water. He knew that we'd find her. That is one thing I know for certain. If we can't stop him, he ain't gonna stop himself.
Gordon hands Peter a piece of paper. Inside a sizable detached house, a woman hands Peter a graduation photo of Julia.
Will this be all right?
Yes, ma'am, that's great. Thank you very much.
Is she still living at home, ma'am? We were looking for apartments.
But they're not moving in together until after the wedding. Julia wants to be married.
Did she ever mention anything out of the ordinary? For instance, somebody she recently met, or somebody perhaps watching her, following her?
No.
Pardon me.
Gordon steps out of the room to take the call.
Maybe this isn't the man. Maybe Julia's safe.
There are certain things that he does that make us pretty positive that this is the man.
Last year.
Gordon listens on his phone, nodding. A slight smile crosses his face. As Peter and Gordon are leaving the house...
What's going on, Gordon?
Riverside Sheriff found a dog breeder in Woodcrest. 3 years ago, she had a buyer for an albino shepherd pup. Sheriff checks DMV. Son of a bitch drives a 92 Ford pickup. Guess what color?
Aqua green.
A number of police cars speed over to a plane at an airfield. Gordon and Peter step out of the plane.
Apart. SWAT's had the house under surveillance for about 20 minutes. Carl Rudolph Starger. No registered weapons, no prior. Got a license for his dog, though. Named him Valentine.
They climb into a car and the convoy of vehicles sets off. Peter takes out a file on Starger. He removes his sunglasses to study a photo of him. Lying in his bath, Starger spits out a jet of water.
Lambs eat up, and don't really toast. And little lambs eat ivy. A kid'll eat ivy too, wouldn't you?
He takes in another mouthful of water, and as he spits it out, an unseen force seems to grip him. He writhes about in the water for a moment, then reaches over the side for his bottle of aspirin. Seeing that it's empty, he tosses it away. A convoy of police cars pull up on all sides of a school building. A naked, wet Starger heads into his kitchen and opens a cupboard. As he roots around inside it, a force seems to grip him again. He stumbles across the kitchen and opens another cupboard.
Brock, Agent Ramsey, Agent Novak. We got here as fast as we could. I briefed them on the way over. Where do we stay?
Here's the situation. Got a high ground team on the roof. Four man element to the east. Got an entry team in the van, and across from the house, a two man element to the south.
Have you seen him yet?
No. There's been some movement in the kitchen. Can't tell what it is. You think the girl's in there?
We'll proceed assuming that she is.
Armed officers run towards the house. Another team bursts out of a van, guns at the ready. They all head across the street and in through the gate surrounding the house. They get ready to barge down the front door. Another team prizes open the back door. They head up the stairs and into a bedroom where the walls are covered in photos. They move towards the bathroom door and check inside. They hurry back down the stairs. Suddenly the commotion stops, and they all move more quietly, converging on a central target. Starger's lying on the floor, face down and naked, metal rings protruding from his back. Now strapped to a stretcher, he's being ferried into a waiting vehicle.
Checking the county general. Reed's already there.
Make sure he stays cuffed. I want two men on him at all times. I don't want anyone to treat him but Reed. Not so much as a thermometer up his ass, understand?
Gordon comes out.
She's not here.
Yeah.
You should, come downstairs.
Peter shines his flashlight on a shelf full of bottles of bleach. As the other officers shine their lights around the basement, they find dolls mutilated in a variety of ways, and birds and butterflies kept in bell jars. One doll has a bird's skull for a head, another a feathered bird's head. Peter shines his light up to the ceiling, where it illuminates a frame with chains hanging off it. Gordon shines his light on a metal table, which has four lines of increasing curvature etched into it and the name Carver. He presses a button and a monitor springs into life. Peter and the officer look at a bank of screens. A woman's trapped in a tank that's rapidly filling with water. A light comes on in a tank where Julia's sitting.
Hello? Hello? Please, is there anyone there? Hello? Can you hear me?
She puts her hands against the glass. She curls up on the bench. The detectives are with a doctor who's looking at some brain scans. He turns to look at them.
Have you ever heard of Whelan's infraction? It's a form of schizophrenia. It's very rare, it's very severe. In any schizophrenic, these areas would be affected. But in someone with Whelan's, they're hit hard and they're hit fast.
Can't you load him up with Thorazine or Desoxin?
Normal psychotropics don't work. This thing is caused by a virus that infects the neurological system in utero. It lays dormant until it's triggered by some kind of trauma. Most likely, he's exhibited symptoms for some time, but the infraction or the breach didn't occur till today. The triggers can vary, usually water-related, but the results don't vary. He's not just catatonic. He's disappeared. Like having a dream and never waking up.
For how long?
Oh, forever.
Reed, I think we might be missing the bigger picture here. Now, whatever state that he happens to be in, there is a girl that is missing. And her name is Julia Hickson. And he is the only one that knows where she is. He keeps them in this thing for about 40 hours. Now, he took Julia Hickson at 7:30 last night.
Peter, you know me. If there were anything, anything.
Suddenly, he stops and thinks.
What?
Now, in slow motion, the detectives are running towards a helicopter that's landing on the roof. Still handcuffed to his stretcher, Stargus hurried into the Campbell Center. The detectives are with Catherine and the team.
He provides them with food, drinking water, and a toilet. Now, she thinks she's been kidnapped, that there's a chance of survival. But it's just a form of torture. This is a kind of ritual for him, a cleansing before he takes him home and turns him into a doll, a toy. Now, this thing is fully automated. And unless we find her by tonight, this will happen to her. At the request of Mr. Cooperman, we contacted your board of directors.
And they've given their approval. And so have Edward's parents.
But the decision is yours. Henry?
Henry takes off his glasses.
Yes. Mira.
And it's up to Catherine. She's the one who'd have to face whatever risks there might be. So I support whatever decision she makes.
Can I ask you something?
Please.
If he wasn't like this, if he was conscious, do you think that he would tell you where she is?
There's always a chance of a confession, yeah. And there's things that he's done that show a need for disclosure. He hasn't had a sympathetic ear. He wants someone to listen, to try and understand him.
Look, I feel for this girl, I do. But Starger may no longer know the truth. For severe schizophrenics, there's no discerning between fantasy and reality.
Is it possible?
If he came to trust me, yes. But it takes months to earn that kind of trust.
Is it possible?
Catherine looks down, shaking her head. Peter looks at Catherine, who's watching the woman slowly drowning on the screen. Now Starger's being hurried through the corridors of the Campbell Center. Peter and the team walk into the control room of the procedure room, where Miriam and Henry are preparing Starger. Miriam uncovers his back.
What happened here?
We removed 14 steel rings.
Should have left him the way he was. He used to suspend himself, didn't he? Yeah, they're comforted by the feeling of weightlessness, like floating in water.
In the control room.
Now, this, gentlemen, is the catalyst, the neurological synaptic transfer system. Not only maps the mind, it sends the signal to another party. All you need to do is tune in, but you do much more than tune in. You become part of the show.
Starger's face is covered with a sensory cloth.
He's ready.
Miriam goes over to Catherine.
Why the three stations?
For a while, we tried joint therapy sessions, two shrinks for the price of one, but Edward hated it. He'll only talk to Catherine. She has a gift.
A probe is inserted into the arm of Catherine's suit. Statistics come up on the screen in the control room. Miriam looks down at her.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
Miriam places the sensory cloth over her face.
Response signal? Functioning. We implanted a touch-sensitive microchip in her hand, so if she wants to stop the session or if it gets too intense, she can give the signal and we abort.
The tables are lowered away, so Catherine and Starger are left suspended from the ceiling.
When we were ready for practical testing, Miriam and I auditioned some of the best child therapists in the country.
And all they did was observe and report, nothing more.
Catherine was the least experienced, but she came so highly recommended that we decided, what the hell, we'll give her a shot. And immediately, we could tell she was different.
The lights have gone out in the procedure room. Catherine's eyes focuses on a network of pathways. As she stares more intently, she's drawn into the network and down a dark tunnel filled with intertwined ropes and dolls' faces. She comes up through water weeds to a baptism ceremony in a lake. A young boy is dunked under the water while a man bends over him with a Bible. The scene turns upside down, and she's under the water again, looking at a pair of men's legs amongst the weeds. She continues moving upwards through a darkened chamber. The scene tilts anti-clockwise until it's the right way up. Catherine's lying by the edge of a murky underground stream. Drops of blood splash into the stream and onto a ladybird, which is bounced off a leaf. Another lands on a muslin cloth, covering Catherine's face. She reaches up to pull it off. A black dog heads up some stairs. Catherine sees the blood on the cloth. Catherine turns to see a house. She stands up, dropping the cloth into the stream. Then she sets off through the chamber. She peers into a room to see the black dog next to a bath of blood, shaking itself dry. Bloody water is spilling over the sides of the bath. A noise makes Catherine turn round. A little boy is running up a vertiginous set of stone steps. She moves forward and finds herself standing on the edge of a staircase, overlooking a chasm. The boy is on the staircase on the wall opposite. She waves to him, but he runs off down a corridor. She finds herself in a room where the little boy is standing next to a large horse. He peers over at her. She smiles and walks over to him, but he hides behind the horse.
Hey, you.
The boy runs to the far wall. Catherine goes over to the horse and starts petting it.
Yeah, you like that touch. Is your name Carl? You know, I know another little boy with a horse. His name's Edward. And the boy, not the horse.
She peers under the horse's head at the young Stager, but Stager backs away. He looks up at a clock. The hand starts to move quickly, and Stager looks frightened. As he glances up, the hand moves round the unnumbered dial towards a red area.
What's wrong?
Stager pushes her out of the way. As the hand comes to the end of the dial, a glass cage filled with parallel blades falls down onto the horse, slicing it into segments. Then it pulls apart, so each segment is visible within its own compartment. Catherine looks at the macabre scene, then over at Stager, huddled into a corner. Slowly she walks over to a segment of the horse, where its heart is still beating. Stager runs out of the room. Catherine slips between two of the compartments and heads after Stager. Stager runs down a staircase. Catherine arrives at the top of the staircase. She looks down at a darkened room with chambers lining the walls. Each of the chambers contains a naked woman who've all been strung up in a variety of positions. Catherine heads up some steps towards a central chamber containing an upright figure. There's a handle on the outside of the grimy, slime-covered tank. Catherine pulls it. Inside the tank, a mechanism is released, setting free the figure. Catherine presses a button. Lights go on in the tanks, and various mechanisms are set in motion, so the glass front of each chamber slides open. Inside, women made to look like dolls writhe around in scenes of bondage. One woman's attached to strings, which pull her around like a puppet. In another room, a woman jogs up and down in high heels, attached to a carriage with a bit between her teeth. The glass front of the main chamber slides open. A muscle-bound woman inside steps out. She starts to follow Catherine down a passageway. Catherine comes to a bleached-out scene, where a woman sits amongst deer, her hands bound. She stretches her bound wrists out to Catherine, who slowly moves towards her. The strong woman is approaching. She throws Catherine against a wall. The strong woman picks Catherine up and carries her over her shoulder, past a mannequin-like woman twirling on a mirrored podium. She carries Catherine into a darkened, cavernous chamber. A man is sitting on a throne. The skin on his back is pierced with metal hooks, which are attached to flowing purple drapes. The strong woman throws Catherine down to the floor before the throne, then walks off. Catherine comes too, raising her head from the marble floor. Up a flight of marble steps above her, the man on the throne rises to his feet. He moves down the stairs, pulling the lengthy flowing purple drapes behind him. Catherine reaches for the microchip on her hand, then turns to look at the man.
Where you come from?
Peter's looking at photos and smoking.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, she's back.
We're right there.
He puts out his cigarette in an ashtray full of stubs. Then he walks out past Gordon, who's asleep at his desk.
All right. Come on, Catherine.
She's had quite a journey. Not like anything we've ever seen before.
So she's made contact?
Oh, yes. She's gone very deep into his world. Time's too far.
It's cold.
That could be dangerous.
What are you talking about?
Well, if she came to believe that Starger's world is real, then theoretically her mind could convince her body that anything that was done to it there was actually done. Like the old wives' tale. Right. You die in your dream, you die in your life.
Henry, could you raise the temperature in here, please?
Dr. Kent?
Just a moment, please.
Dr. Kent, can I come in there to speak with her, please?
We have to be patient. I mean, look at her. She's drowsy. Let her wake up.
We don't have a lot of time. Do you understand that?
The sun's beginning to set over Starger's outbuilding and cylinders. Inside, as Julia rips at some food, a sprinkler system starts spraying her with water. She climbs down from the bench she's sitting on and crawls underneath it to shield herself from the pouring water. Suddenly, the water stops. Julia remains huddled underneath the bench. Catherine is sitting at Edward's bedside. Peter comes in to see her.
Am I interrupting anything?
She looks up at him briefly, but seems reluctant to speak.
Is it okay if I...
He takes a seat on the opposite side of Edward's bed.
He knows you're here, doesn't he? My friend, Dr. Reed, said that's very unusual, schizophrenia, that is, in a child that's this young.
And they usually think it's autism. What you have to understand is there's nothing wrong with his body. What's paralyzed is a part of his mind. So damaged by the virus, he can't even will himself to move.
You think you can change that?
Do you believe there's a part of yourself that you don't show anybody?
I think everybody has that side of themselves.
During a session, when I'm inside, I get to see those things. I feel them. With Starger, I felt things I never want to feel again. He's not even Carl Starger anymore. He's this idealized version of himself, a king in a very, very twisted kingdom. It's the place for him to indulge every... You know, I don't want to talk about this in here.
She walks out. Now she and Peter are sitting outside the Campbell Center.
I could never do what you do. Devote myself to understanding a mind like that.
I don't think I'll ever be able to understand a mind like that.
But you try, that's your job.
I guess so.
You don't like what you do?
I like it better my old job.
Used to be an attorney. I was a prosecutor.
What happened?
I had a case. This little girl was molested. And because of this one tiny piece of evidence that was tainted, he walked. Charles Gish walked away. Nothing I could do about it. The night after he was released, Margaret's parents came home. That was the little girl's name, Margaret Sims. And they found Charles Gish sitting in their living room, was watching television, and Margaret was sitting next to him, and he had cut her open right down the middle. And the parents found Margaret's heart in the freezer.
Charles figured they'd probably want to keep it. After that, I left the DA and joined the FBI. Figured I'd just try to catch him.
Till now.
Yeah.
You know, I started to tell you that Stargirl really isn't Stargirl anymore. Well, that's true, and it's not. The dominant side is still this horrible thing, but there's a positive side.
Positive side?
Well, the way he sees himself as a child.
But isn't that him?
The boy Stargirl made contact. He's curious about me. If I could reach the boy, then maybe he'd tell me about Julia. Whatever happened to Charles Gish?
Old Charlie beat the murder rap because he was insane when he killed Margaret. His attorney milked the jury for all they were worth. Said that a life of sexual abuse drove him to do these things, and, you know, whatever the fuck, all that same old bullshit.
Why is that bullshit?
I believe a child can experience 100 times worse the abuse than what Gish went through and still grow up to be somebody that would never, ever, ever hurt another living being.
You're sure of that?
Yes, I am. I'm sure of that.
Gordon comes out.
Hey, where the hell you been?
I've been right here.
Well, next time tell me, okay?
I didn't want to disturb you. You look so cute. You know, you all sleepy when you get that look on you.
Your colleagues want to know what to do with Sarger.
Catherine's lost for words for a minute. Peter stares at her.
Tell them to prep him. I'll be right there.
Thank you, Catherine.
She turns away.
Stargirl have any pets? You know, cats, dogs?
In the procedure room, Stargirl's dog's licking his hand.
Yeah, you're a good boy, aren't you, Valentine?
That's supposed to help? On a subconscious level, yes. Anything that was special to Stargirl, gave him pleasure, should make him more accessible, more peaceful.
Peaceful?
That's enough, then.
Catherine suspended next to Stargirl, both with the sensory cloths over their faces.
Mr. Noga?
Doctor.
Thank you.
You got
what?
Round 2.
The main lights are turned off, and dimmer coloured lights switched on. The platforms rise out of the floor again.
Stop playing around.
I'm not. It's a power problem. We're locked out, Catherine. I need you to check the circuit breaker. I want you to check circuits 6 through 12. Come on. Get up.
Mm-hmm.
6 through 12.
Catherine gets up and stumbles across the dimly lit floor. She clutches onto a trolley as she passes by. Then she moves onwards, towards the corner of the room. When she gets there, she looks around in confusion. She turns round to look back at the procedure room, which suddenly seems enormous to her. The lights go out. She glances over at the control room, where everyone is stock still, as if in suspended animation. Then she sees herself and Starga lying suspended from the ceiling with the sensory cloths over their faces.
I'm already in.
What did she say?
Catherine crouches down in the corner, then suddenly finds herself in a small glass tank. She puts her hands out to touch the glass walls of the tank. Then she looks down. The glass tank is sitting on top of an extraordinarily tall tower. Catherine tries to stand up, and as she does so, the metal roof of the tank opens, and she flies upwards, attached by her ankles to a rope. Catherine reaches up to release the rope around her ankles, and it unfurls, sending her plummeting downwards into a deep chasm, and through a hole into a dark chamber, which slows her progress as if she's moving through water. She floats slowly downwards, red robes undulating around her. Valentine comes trotting towards her.
Come here, boy. Valentine.
He sits down obediently before her as she floats just above the ground. She sees someone going into a house in the distance. Now Catherine is at the door of the house. She reaches for the knob and opens the door. Inside, little boy Starga is busily drying up plates at the sink. Catherine stands beside him at the sink.
Need some help?
He gives her a look.
I've got a present for you.
A pendant from round her neck.
If you need me, or if you feel like I'm around but you can't find me, just shine it like this.
She opens it to reveal a mirror.
I take it.
A plate slips.
You like it? What's the matter?
Starga shoves her into a cupboard.
What happened over here? Just broke all by itself. Oh. Did you break that plate?
I broke the plate.
Did you break that plate?
I broke the plate.
Hey! Let's break them all. How about that? You little fucking liar! I should have drowned you like the run of the litter.
Catherine looks down to see she's standing in an eel-infested vat of water.
Shut up! You're not his mother! She's not your mother. She left us, Carl. Remember that! See that? See that?
Inside the cupboard, Catherine sees a photo of a room. She moves towards it.
Christ. Jesus Christ! What the fuck is it? Get back! Get over here! Playing with dolls, you little faggot! You're some kind of a woman! Get out of here! Damn it! You want something to cry about? I'll give you something to cry about! Woman! Mama boy! I didn't raise no faggot!
Through the slats in the cupboard, Catherine sees Starga's father pick up the iron.
Stop your crying. You want to iron like a woman? Let me show you how to iron like a woman.
Something moves behind her in the cupboard. Catherine spins round. The photo of the room has come to life. The adult Stager is sitting beside a bath in which a woman is lying. He's putting bloody pieces of flesh into a bowl for Valentine, who's a puppy. Valentine trots out through a door, and Stager puffs on a cigarette. Slowly and hesitantly, Catherine moves towards Stager, who has his back to her.
She was my first. And I made such a mess. I didn't know what I was doing.
Catherine moves round so she can see the woman lying in the bath of blood. Stager turns to look at Catherine through his mop of hair.
Why are you here? Don't lie.
I came to help you.
Lie. Bitch. Whore. Cunt.
You sound like your father.
Was nothing. He is nothing.
Who told you to say that? Do you remember the first time he talked to you? Were you in water? Maybe you went swimming.
It was my baptism. My father, he pushed me under. I think I had some kind of seizure. I think I was drowning. And everybody just looked at me. And nobody helped me. Nobody. Except him. My father. He took me home that night and he broke three of my ribs and fractured my jaw. I was 6 years old.
What your father did to you is evil. What he did to you is wrong. He treated you like a thing.
He was more
should be treated like that.
He bangs his head against the bath, and Catherine instinctively feels for her microchip as he rears up to his feet.
Is that right? In what world do you live in?
Carl, where is Julia Hickson?
No names. No names!
Where is she? I know you, Carl. You
want to
tell me.
Are you not me?
He backs away from her.
Are you here?
You know who I am?
Where is she? Where's Julia? Where's Julia, Carl?
Stager grabs her from behind, throwing her to the floor on her back.
Can't be right.
Black ram-like horns protruding from his head, Stager moves over Catherine's body. He slides forward so his face is inches from hers. As she touches the bleached white skin of his shoulder, he leaps so he's crouching over her. Then he reaches upwards and opens up a metal collar which he clasps round her neck.
Going to
fall. No change.
Christ.
What about emergency cessation?
No.
Gradually terminate the feed, disable the receptors.
It could lead to massive shock. And Henry, could you please shut that thing off?
What's going on?
That hypothetical situation I told you about? It's happening.
Well, can't you stop it?
It's not that simple.
Well, you stopped it before.
Yes, that was different. That was Edward. With Stager, his mind is unfamiliar territory and she's lost. She thinks this is real.
Well, is there anything that we can do?
Whatever we do runs the risk of making things worse for her.
Worse. That's great. So she's lost somewhere.
Henry.
The third suspension device.
No. No.
No what?
I need you here.
Julia's pacing around her cell. She sits down on the bench and draws her knees up to her chest. Suddenly, the spray of water starts again. She bursts into angry tears. Then the water stops.
Let me the fuck out! Let me the fuck out! Let me out! Get me out, you sick fuck! Fuck you! Let me out! Do something! Do something, Julia! Do something! Do something!
She starts feeling along the edge of the tank, looking for any gaps. In one corner of the chamber, she looks up, then hops up onto the bench and starts tugging at a metal bolt in the ceiling. Miriam stamps a microchip into the side of Peter's hand. In the procedure room, he lies suspended beside Catherine and Starga, wearing a latex bodysuit.
I got bugs crawling all over my body.
It gets worse. You're completely unprepared for this.
Doctor, can't we've been over all this?
Yes, but I've been through the process.
She went through the process too. It didn't matter. You don't know him.
Okay.
Miriam gently lays a sensory cloth over his face.
Be lucky.
Come on, guys.
In the control room, Miriam joins Henry and Gordon.
Ready? Peter, the first few minutes will be very disorienting. Remember to stay calm and focused. Instincts play a very important part here, so trust them. Peter, you've read her file. Hit her with something personal. And remember, Peter, it's not real.
In a glass container beside Peter, red droplets fall into the clear liquid, multiplying and swirling until they create a dizzying kaleidoscope of colours racing past. Lightning erupts and the colours morph into globules of seething liquid. Then the liquid becomes a tunnel of multicoloured lights racing past at breakneck speed. Beneath the cloth, Peter's panting hard. Needles of lights pump like a heartbeat. They dissolve into white static, then explode in a maelstrom of colour. In a deserted ploughed field, three identical female figures sit frozen, staring up at the grey sky, mouths open like a row of ghostly mannequins. Peter is slumped face down in a puddle of water beside them. Light from a mirror flashes in his face. At first, his eyes flicker open. Then he suddenly wakes with a start and sits up. As the light flashes on him, he looks around, confused. He turns to see the three frozen figures beside him, still looking upwards, their mouths open in mock surprise. Suddenly, each one whispers to him in turn.
"What the fuck? Have you seen him? My boy, my little one. His father took him so he's leading out of my hall. Big deal.
Once they've all spoken, they sit like statues again.
Okay.
As his eyes follow the flashing light, Peter finds himself standing in an ornate bedroom. He slowly turns around to see little boy Starger dazzling him with the reflection from a heart-shaped pendant around his neck. He turns and runs away, leaving Peter staring at an elaborate four-poster bed on which Catherine is reclining. As he walks around the bed, she sits impassive and motionless. She's wearing a black lace dress and a shiny silver mask, which flares out into two grotesque curved horns.
Catherine? Is that you? You all right?
He lifts off the mask and places it down on the bed beside her. She creeps across the bed, trying to seduce him. As she presses her lips against him, Peter sees a buzzard flap its huge wings and take off, rattling the canopy of lights covering the bed. She pulls his face towards her and kisses him passionately on the lips. Peter looks overcome as she strokes his face and whispers in his ear. A wicked look comes over her face as Starger appears behind him, clad in regal robes. He pulls a red hood down over Peter's head. Catherine reclines on the bed as Starger suffocates him. When Peter comes to, he's spread-eagled on the bed, his hands and feet tied. Starger, in gold crown and cape, stands before a table of medical instruments, dipping his fingers in a small font of water. Catherine sits motionless, staring with an enigmatic smile. Peter calls to her for help, but the words won't come out. Starger walks over and clutches the belt of Peter's trousers, looking down at him.
Naughty worm.
He takes a long pair of scissors and slides both points deep into Peter's stomach as he screams in agony. Then he reaches inside the wound with both hands and draws out a long slither of intestine, winding one end around a barbed spit suspended over Peter's body. Shrieking with delight, Starger turns a handle and starts winding Peter's bloody intestine around the spit. Catherine's impassive expression falters and a single tear runs down her cheek. She gets to her feet and selects a long pair of scissors from the table of instruments. She plunges them deep into Starga's back, and his expression freezes in shock. He looks down to see the point of the scissors protruding from his shoulder. Peter throws his head from side to side, screaming.
It's okay.
What the fuck happened?
Where are we?
Catherine, now normal, stares at a huge tank with a ghostly female figure swimming around inside. Little boy Starga is standing beside it. She walks towards it, and Peter stands up and follows her.
Carl. Oh, it's okay.
Julia.
Don't be scared. I would never hurt you. I'm your friend. And Peter, he's a friend too. Do you know where this place is?
As she gives the little boy a hug, she notices blood on her hand from a wound on his back. Peter notices a strange curved symbol on the base of the tank. He remembers seeing it before, etched onto the table in Starga's basement.
Even if Peter doesn't find Julia, I promise.
Catherine!
I will come back and help you.
Catherine!
Let's
go.
What are you doing?
Catherine, I saw her. I know how to find Julia. Let's go.
I just can't leave him here.
God damn it, Catherine, let's go.
Paul.
I know how to find him.
No!
From behind the little boy, Starga appears, bald, white eyes, and his face deathly pale. He grabs him around the waist, smiling at Catherine defiantly. Peter presses the microchip on Catherine's hand. In the procedure room, Peter and Catherine return to their bodies.
Back.
Take it easy, Peter.
Is she okay?
Take it easy, Peter. Just breathe.
Is she okay?
Yeah, I think she is.
Can you get me out of this fucking stool?
In Julia's cell, the sprinkler showers her with water. She hammers against the glass walls. A torrent of water blasts out of the plug hole. Outside Starga's house.
Yeah, call here.
Boss Novak.
Yeah, what's up?
I want you to go down to the basement at Starga's workplace and call me when you get down there.
They haven't finished building the grid yet.
Fuck the grid. Call me when you get down there.
You okay, Pete?
Fine.
You want to tell me what happened there?
Oh, fuck.
You in pain?
Oh,
what happened? Fuck. Peter?
I saw her.
What do you see?
I know where to find her.
Who?
Julia. I know where to find her. I saw her.
Okay. Why don't you come and let Dr. Ken have a look at you? Pete?
Cole.
Yeah, this is Cole. Now what am I doing down here?
That machine that he uses, there's a hoist. And I want you to look for a plaque or a metal plate with some sort of logo on it.
Yeah, I got it. It's Carver Industrial Equipment in Bakersfield, California.
I want you to find out every goddamn thing that you can about that machine. Who used it, who sold it, who bought it. Just find out everything you can. I'm gonna call you from the chopper in about 20 minutes.
Alright, let me have a look.
Good. The FBI has left the building.
What? I haven't had a chance to clear Novak.
What did you expect me to do? There's no way I could stop it.
Go. I'm okay.
Are you sure?
Mm-hmm.
Let me have a look. Come on. Okay. Alright.
Okay.
Helicopter blades whir into life.
Just talk to me. What if your mind is playing tricks on you? They shot you full of drugs, Peter. Who knows if what you saw is real?
Henry notices the door to the procedure room slide shut.
Catherine, open this door. Catherine.
Robin.
What are you doing?
I'm gonna help you.
No.
I'm for you.
Do not jeopardize your career. You're not authorized for teaching, you know that.
She slides the knob on the control panel. Then, looking inside a book of notes, she finds a card with a painting of a woman in religious robes. Peter runs across a rooftop and boards a waiting helicopter, which then takes off. Henry gets a message, access denied, on his monitor screens.
Miriam.
What's she doing?
You know what she's doing.
For Christ's sake. Catherine! Jesus.
She's changed the codes. You can't get in.
What happened?
She reversed the feeds.
What does that mean?
The process is intended for her to go into his mind.
But instead, she's bringing him into hers.
Julia screams desperately. As her cell is now knee-deep in water and filling up rapidly, she hurls both shoes at the glass wall. The chopper soars overhead, passing an oil well pumping below. Little boy Starga stands beneath the branches of a pink blossom tree. In front of him, on a raised platform of stone steps, stands Catherine, clad in red and white religious robes. A pendant around her neck reflects a beam of light on him. He begins to slowly walk towards her. She holds her hands open in a gesture of welcome. He sits down on the steps and gazes up at her. As she walks down and sits beside him, he backs away in alarm. She smiles at him kindly.
I promised I'd come back and help you. See, I always keep my promises.
Can I stay here with you?
No, honey, I'm sorry. It doesn't work that way. There's nothing I can do about that.
Yes, there is.
He's now become adult Starga.
I found this bird, and he was injured, had a broken leg or something. My father found out that I had it. I knew that he would do something horrible to it. It was just a matter of time. So I took it to the sink and I held it under. It was better for the bird. I saved him.
I can't do that, Carl. I won't.
It doesn't matter.
A black and yellow tarantula crawls up the little boy's back. A giant millipede curls around his hand.
He found me.
The light around them darkens and a wind begins to pick up. A small round plunge pool in front of them swells with the force of a huge gold cape lifting up inside it. Starga's head breaks through the surface of the water, and he slowly rises out of the pool. As he finally steps out, he casts off the regal gold cape from his shoulders. He gently weaves his arms around, then disappears.
To a guy named Bainbridge who tried to build the machine works out of Delano. Bainbridge ends up in bankruptcy court and the state winds up with the land. And guess who they hire to seal the place up?
Oh, you're fucking kidding me.
Nah, I'm not the kidding type. Carl Rudolph Starger.
Where's the land?
Exit 10 off Highway 99. We're on our way now.
Got it. I know where that is.
Catherine's eyes search around the blossom trees, looking for Starger. She spots him hiding, and as he tries to flee, she raises a gold crossbow and fires. The arrow pierces his foot, pinning him to the ground. As he struggles to move, she knees him in the face. In Julia's cell, the water's nearly at the ceiling. In blind panic, she searches for a way out.
This is the area!
Catherine fires two more crossbow arrows into Starga's hands, crucifying him on the ground.
My world, my rules.
Julia's cell is nearly full. The chopper lands in front of the ramshackle outbuilding and two cylindrical towers, surrounded by fields. Catherine punches Starga's face again and again, but he smiles at her, bloody and defiant. She draws a long sword from behind her back. Peter rushes from the helicopter into one of the towers, drawing his gun.
Do it!
Starga laughs maniacally as Catherine holds the sword above him, then plunges it deep into his chest. Blood fills his mouth, then he manages to speak.
It's not real.
She savagely twists the blade back and forth inside him.
Be gone, boy. Boy, be gone. You cannot kill me.
Distraught, she gives up. Peter searches through the outbuilding, finding nothing. The chopper waits for him nearby. Julia's cell has nearly filled with water, with barely room for her head above the surface. Outside the building, Peter notices the air vent on an old generator blow open. Hurrying over to it, he discovers a pipe which travels below ground. Kicking up dust nearby, he follows the line of the pipe to a large metal trapdoor in the ground. He lifts it open. Catherine lifts little boy Starga off the ground in her arms. His chest has a bloody wound. Adult Starga lies nearby, still impaled on the sword.
It's okay. Save
Peter opens the metal door to an underground room and creeps along in the darkness.
You can stay here with me.
As Catherine stands up, carrying little boy Starger, the light around her brightens. Peter discovers Julia floating in her cell and bangs on the glass wall. Peter fires at the glass. Catherine begins lowering little boy Starger into the plunge pool. Little boy Starger recalls his baptism as he sinks below the water. In the procedure room, Starger's now breathing heavily. Unable to break the glass by firing at it, Peter discovers a long metal stave. He swings it at the glass and shatters it, sending gallons of water gushing out in a huge torrent. Little boy Starger's hand tenses as Catherine holds him underwater. Peter hauls the frightened Julia out of the water.
You're okay. You're okay.
Little boy Starger's hand finally goes limp as Catherine looks down at him sadly. In the procedure room, Starger pants hard beneath the sensory cloth, then stops. Catherine silently cradles little boy Starger in the round pool. In the cell, Peter holds Julia in his arms. In the procedure room, Catherine slides the sensory cloth from her face as the team watch behind the glass. She turns to Starger, lying mutely beside her, and looks close to tears. Sobbing, she rolls over onto her side. Peter comforts Julia, holding her close to him as they sit in the shallow water. In an upstairs room in Starger's house, the floor is littered with pictures and artifacts as the officers investigate. Peter crouches down to look at a print of an oil painting depicting a man's intestines being drawn out on a spit.
Somebody outside for you.
He goes to the window and sees Catherine waiting outside.
What is she doing here?
Said she wanted to see his home.
It's pretty strange.
She's keeping his dog, Peter. I'd say pretty fucking strange as par for the course.
Peter walks out of Starger's front door to speak to Catherine, waiting behind the crime scene tape.
And almost didn't recognize you. How long do you get to be a civilian?
A couple weeks, till after the inquiry, and see what happens. Ramsey told me you were thinking of, what do you call that thing?
Reversal.
Reversal.
Mm-hmm.
With the kid that you were working with?
Yeah, Edward.
Edward. Are you sure you want to do that?
Absolutely.
You're not worried about what might happen?
I would never do anything to hurt Edward.
It wasn't him I was worried about.
What about you? How are you?
I'm not sure. I kind of remember pieces of everything. According to the FBI, you guys put me on some drug-fueled mind bender, which then triggered a memory I already had, and officially we found Julia Hickson through good old-fashioned detective work.
I guess this is hello and goodbye then.
So. Thanks for everything, Kathy.
They give one another a hug.
Be safe.
On the terracotta sand dunes dotted with trees, Catherine's wearing the long white feathered robe. She places the toy wooden boat in the fork of a tree, now transformed with pink blossom, then turns around, smiling happily. Edward is leaning against the gnarled tree trunk, eyeing her suspiciously. She gazes back warmly and begins walking towards him. He gets to his feet and approaches her, his expression impassive. With pink blossoms swirling about them like snow, Edward finally reaches Catherine.